Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Cynthia Cherish Malloran, Reverend DJ Cherish the Love, and you're listening to Primary Food on Heritage Radio Network, coming to you from Roberta's Pizza. Thank you for being here and for coming back. It's been a great last four episodes. I've gotten great feedback. Someone told me I had a very California NPR voice. I'm taking that as a compliment. I guess. I don't know how else to take that. So I'm here with Jack in the booth. Hey, Jack. And Sasha Jones again.
Hi.
Welcome
there.
Back. Sasha Jones from Sigley Holistics, also Life Cycle Ceremonies celebrant. And we've got on the line with us today Charlotte Ulette. Can you hear us?
Yes. Hello. Thank you so much, Reverend Cynthia. Great to be in great company.
I love
this. And with
my
colleague, Sasha.
Hi, Charlotte.
This is so great to hear your voice beam in from the cloud. Okay. So I'm going to just give a little intro and then we're going to dive right into, you know, all the stuff that we've got in common here. So again, the name of the show is Primary Food. And I like to focus on that. And we'll give a little definition of what that is. Sasha and I are both graduates from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, and this is where we learned this concept of primary food. Quoting IIN, the foods you eat are secondary to all the other things that feed you in life. Your relationships, career, spirituality, exercise, routine, those are the things that we call primary foods. All that we consider today as nutrition is really just secondary source of energy. Primary food is more than what's on your plate. It's healthy relationships, regular physical activity, a fulfilling career, and a spiritual practice. And all of these things can fill your soul and satisfy your hunger for life. And when primary food is balanced and satiating, your life feeds you, making what you eat secondary. And I personally like to add in there creativity. That's something that I guess can cross over into spirituality. Because my focus is output. And why? Because for me, getting through cancer treatment, I kept my creative primary food output high. It helped me sort through everything and keep me in a very healthy place. So, but before I forget, let me tell everyone how to reach out to me and get my attention on social media. So that's Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at DJ Cherish the Love, and that's spelled L-U-V. And hashtag using primary food, and hashtag heritage underscore radio, or hashtag Rev Love. Okay, so let's jump into our guests, why we have Charlotte Ulette here, and this book in my hand, Life Cycle Ceremonies, and Sasha Jones sitting to my right. Hey, Charlotte.
Yes.
Okay, so the three of us here, we are all, I guess we're all ordained ministers, aren't we?
We are.
This is like a my favorite joke. Three ordained ministers walked into a bar. So I have realized that I had been lacking ceremony in my life. Like, I have been craving more ceremony and realizing that I haven't really been honoring milestones in my life in a healthy, happy way. And I only started to realize this because I started to get queries from people asking me to officiate their weddings, which is what you guys are experts at. So we're going to talk about that. So tell us about life cycle ceremonies, Charlotte.
Yeah, life cycle ceremonies are just that, ceremonies that mark the milestones in our life from cradle to grave, from, you know, birth to death, all of that. And you're right, a lot of times we don't pay attention to those things in our life that might be minuscule or devastating. Mm-hmm. A lot of people go through divorce, and that's, that milestone is not marked. And maybe it's not because it's shunned in some ways by society, but then again, it has a big effect on us. Of course, there's also job loss or adopting a child or all different kinds of ceremonies. Some of these might be something that people do, they mark just, you know, privately, but it's mm-hmm. so nice for many of us to go through these milestones, to do that either with a group of friends or maybe even with a bigger group of friends, because mm-hmm. it's wonderful when we do this, we are crossing the threshold. We are not dismissing what we went through or diminishing it in any way. So we bring it to focus. We think about it. We marinate and ruminate on it, so, because we're talking about, you know, primary foods. And then we're able to create a ceremony that really honors that event in a noble and authentic way, in our words. And so then as we go forward, we really can take that moment and say, hey, we stopped and smelled the roses. We did what we did. We honored it, and we're going forward in our life. And, you know, really, sometimes when we go through traumas or tribulations, you know, where we break, Hemingway says, that's where we become stronger. But if we don't note it, then, you know, we feel this emptiness inside. So it's great that you're feeling that you want to go and do rituals, or the bigger container for it is ceremonies. This is important stuff. And really, this book that we have written, Life Cycle Ceremonies, A Handbook for Your Whole Life, is a compilation of rituals that people, all people, can incorporate into their life in a small way or a big way, any way they wish. And I'm so happy that Sasha is also one of the co-authors. There's 41 celebrant authors, and she writes a kick-ass piece.
So you mentioned ritual versus ceremony. So explain a little bit, just so I'm clearer, as I'm sure other people will probably enjoy hearing the difference. Ritual versus a ceremony, is it just a size thing, or?
No, ritual is something that is a part of a ceremony. You may have a ceremony, it may only have one ritual, but then again, it might have many. Mm-hmm. Maybe, for instance, you know, there would be a hand fasting with the, let's say it's an LGBT, a gay wedding, where the two gals have their hand fasting, and their children may also be involved with the family hand fasting. And then there might be a candle lighting, that's another ritual. Maybe there's a jumping of the broom, which is something mm-hmm. that's done in our African American culture. There are rituals that are part of the ceremony, part of the different points in the ceremony that emphasize something specific as you go through the ceremony, and the ceremony is the container. So, like, for instance, with the wedding, the vows are a certain ritual. Mm-hmm. That's something that they do at a certain point in the wedding, you know, and so that kind of understands it, makes it clear. But a lot of us do simple rituals every day, like when you get up in the morning, maybe there's something that you do. Maybe you open your shades and you take your dog or your cat for a walk. Mm-hmm. We do have a celebrant that walks her cats in the morning. So, you know, and that's something that gives you a lot of joy and maybe peace, and is part of your everyday rituals. Then again, there's other rituals that we do that we create specifically for a ceremony. Maybe for a divorce ceremony, it would be having a knot that you cut, you know, the untying of a knot, because usually we say in weddings we're going to tie the knot. Something like that that makes a lot of sense, and also it might be something symbolic, because you guys, just so you know, with a ritual, it's not always what you say. It's what you do. Mm-hmm. It's what you show. It's the symbols that we create and have meaning. So that's what the difference between a ceremony and a ritual is. Maybe Sasha would like to add to that.
I love the idea of ritual as with primary food as well. To me, day-to-day ritual is so important, and that is a big part of my primary food. So it could be every evening I'm preparing my mug of fire water with lots of different spices, and it's very ritualistic the way that I do that. It could be preparing my big pot of herbal teas, very witch-like. To me, that's a beautiful ritual. But it could also be something, I like the idea of taking things that we classify as chores often and mm-hmm. changing them to rituals.
Oh, yeah.
And making them much more beautiful. And to me, that idea is bringing mindfulness and presence to anything that we do on a regular basis. And that's kind of how I think of what a ritual is. So an example I have that may sound quite silly, but I take when after doing my laundry, I'll take my socks and I'll pair them, put them on top of each other and then roll them into a spiral.
Hmm.
And then I lay them really beautifully in my drawer. And,
oh, that's beautiful.
And it's so, and it's really meditative and calming. And
can you mandala sock my drawer too?
Sure. And, you know, I do that with lots of things in our home, and taking away that whole concept of chore and turning them into ritual really just makes them enjoyable. And
you know, thank you for saying that, because in the last episode we talked about things that we do to reconnect to ourselves, and I said washing dishes, and I couldn't answer really why it was so. Mm-hmm. And it's because it is a ritual for me to do the dishes at certain times of the day, or like demarcators for me of like, okay, this is this part of the day, dishes are clean, kitchen's good, now we can focus on these things. So home rituals, so I guess, Charlotte, there's no ritual that's too small or too big or too silly or too goofy or too anything, is there?
No, there isn't. I think that, you know, it's a personal thing, and how you want to honor yourself mm-hmm. and bring meaning to it. And sometimes, you know something? Think about it, you guys. We're lucky, a lot of us. But imagine people who are in a difficult situation. Let's say they're in war, because we are, our country's in war right now, mm-hmm. or they are in jail. I hear a lot of times with our celebrants that have worked with soldiers or have worked with people who are inmates in jail, that there are rituals they do to keep themselves sane.
Mm.
You know, mm. and it might be that you just mentioned that with the socks, you know, doing a mandala with the socks, which I'm all over that. I love it. But finding a way to keeping yourself healthy and connected and you know, full of love, maybe even during the most trying times, because let's face it, some rituals and in certain times in your life will keep you alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so beautiful, because I'm understanding now more than ever as we're talking about this, the power of ritual to not just to connect or to honor and commemorate, but also to heal. So as you described the untying of the knot, something in me was triggered about my divorce. I felt a little incomplete. I feel like I kind of need to do a little knot untying. Why not?
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Why not?
Yeah. Why not? That's really beautiful. What are rituals that people have invented? Just to give the listeners some, you know, carte blanche, like give them the green light to say, you know, yeah, yeah, you can do whatever you want. Just be creative.
Sure. Sasha, did you want to take that or shall I?
You can go for that one.
Okay, I'll start. Well, as a celebrant, I have to tell you, we've got some great ones all over the country. One of them is in Indiana, and when a man was... had a family contacted them, their dad had died, and he was a real simple guy, you know, just salt of the earth. And when we talked to the family about him, they really didn't have a whole lot to say. They just said, you know, he's just a great guy. He, Polish background, worked so hard for all of us. There was like five kids, and their mom had died when they were young, so he was really taking care of the family. And what he would do in his own way would make sure all of the kids had a little pushki. What's a pushki? I didn't know what this word was either, you guys. It's a little container, like a little, you know, little pouch. It's a pouch. And he would put money in there for all the kids, and he would say to them, hold on to this and, you know, save it for what you might, something you want to buy, and this is what I want to gift to you. So when he died many years later and they had his funeral, what they did was they all took a little, like a pushki, and they put their hopes and dreams in there, and they said, our dad didn't have a lot, but he always gave us hope. He always gave us wishes. He was there for us when, you know, our mother passed away, and he had to do a lot of roles, and it was not a lot of time either, because he worked so hard. Mm-hmm. So what they did was they took a little pouch, they put their wishes in there, and they put it in his, you know, in his casket, And the next day, the sister called us and said of the man who died, "We want to thank you. I want to thank you because really, you understood. Your celebrant, Marta Adubato, understood the very soul of this man. He wasn't a big speaker, but he did something, you know, special for the family. And it was like, it wasn't a ritual that you would just go look in a book and find. It's because we talk to the families or the person that we're doing the ceremonies for. We call them our client honorees. And we find out, what is it? You know, what exactly is it that makes this special? It's not a ritual that's gratuitous that we're just going to make up. Mm-hmm. It's something that really rings true for the family. So a lot of the rituals we do are ones that after we talk and interview them for whatever it is, a wedding ceremony, an adoption ceremony, or even we do ceremonies LGBTQ, LGBTQ weddings and adoptions as well, but also a transgender ceremony for a validation ceremony for a man who, went through this transition, and he wanted to validate himself, and he wanted to tell his community. So it's nothing that we would just create a ritual out of, you know, the box, so to speak. But in talking to them and interviewing them, we would create that ceremony that really works and it has meaning. So I think that's, you know, one example of a ritual that we did that had the wishes of his children, to take place in this ceremony. And what better validation can we have as celebrants than getting a call from a family member saying, right on, because
that's
it's
so
true,
beautiful.
That's what's important. We don't want to mess it up. This is something that really, we're vessels. We want to make sure that we're creating that event, that ritual that has meaning, and that we're not thinking we know it all, because we don't, unless we listen and then mindfully create them, co-author them with the client honorees.
That is so beautiful, and it brings me to, I want to make it very clear for people who are listening that there is something called a celebrant. So what is a celebrant? Define that for us so that we all know, so that it's not a, what is that? It's
like, and specifically a life cycle celebrant.
And a life cycle celebrant.
Yeah, we are certified life cycle celebrants, and there's a whole bunch of us. There's about 100, I mean, there's about 1,000 of us in the United States, and there's about maybe 4,000 in the world. The Celebrant Foundation and Institute is the nonprofit North American chapter of the International Federation of Celebrants. And we actually have celebrants, and we teach people to be celebrants on our online live school. Mm-hmm. And we have celebrants from all over, from U.S., Canada, Europe, Asia. We teach our class in French and in English. And then afterwards, after you become a celebrant, we also have chapters. So our celebrants become a part of our great big worldwide family where we refer ceremonies to one another. And it's very much not just a profession, it is a pro-passion. We love being celebrants. We consider ourselves ceremony activists, if you want to call us that.
I love that.
We activate ceremony and ritual and meaning in people's lives. And so it's a really wonderful thing, and in many ways it's a new career. And if people do want to come to our website, it's celebrantinstitute.org. They can take a little trip around and take a look at videos and press and all sorts of groovy things. One thing that we do that we're really proud of is we just passed a law in the state of New Jersey, and hopefully New York soon, because that's our home state, New Jersey, where civil celebrants are part of the marriage law now, and we're going state by state making that happen. So we're very excited. We have about 1,000 celebrants, and our organization does about 40,000 life cycle ceremonies annually.
So what are, name some life cycle ceremonies, and then Sasha talk about like which ceremonies you've experienced and officiated yourself.
Well, there are so many, as Charlotte said, starting from birth until death, and pretty much every milestone along the way. The ones that I have done are naming ceremonies for families who have babies, and funerals and memorial services and weddings, as well as much smaller ones like home blessings and things like that. There are many more that I've yet to do, but I'm excited about that. Maybe Charlotte, you could help me with remembering some of the other ones that are out there.
Myriad of ceremonies. Go.
I'm sorry?
Name the different types of ceremonies people look to have?
Yeah, most of them, and we teach courses in this, is weddings and all different kinds of coupling ceremonies, funerals and end of life, and there are even things called living funerals, when someone wants to have a funeral before they die, celebration of life ceremonies. Then we have all different kinds of ceremonies across the life cycle when people are leaving home or coming home. It might be for various reasons. Maybe they're in the war. Maybe they've are coming home from some illness that they're coming home from. Mm-hmm. There's all different kinds of healing ceremonies that we do. There's also rite of passage ceremonies, which are huge, you know, for young people that are 17 going away to college. Mm-hmm. Or maybe people coming, going through a rite of passage at any age. There's also, we do a ton of animal ceremonies. We have celebrants that work, like one of them, Lori out in California. She works with the folks at the racetrack and does ceremonies for the horses there. Mm-hmm. And also we do ceremonies here in New Jersey. There's a celebrant works with the Seeing Eye Institute and works with the wonderful dogs that become, you know, wonderful workers. They're working dogs. Mm-hmm. So, and then there's all different kinds of ceremonies, once again, for healing, divorce, as we mentioned, launching one's business, a validation ceremony of any sort for any kind of physical or mental transition or trauma that someone has gone through. Some of them are not just one ceremony. There's a celebrant who works in the medical, she's one of the, you know, a doctor at a hospital, and she does a series of ceremonies, which means that a patient would come in, and then what they would have is a ceremony maybe for the treatment, a ceremony for possibly getting ready for surgery, a ceremony with the doctors, by the way.
Oh, wow.
For, you know, before the surgery, and then afterwards, maybe with her family and friends to help, you know, put wishes forth and good vibes and strong energy and healing, and also help her with her practice to make sure she's eating right, drinking the right things, and, you know, helping her along the way. So it's a whole process and getting the family involved. And then, of course, there's birthing. Let's face it, you know, having a baby ain't easy. So we do a lot of those. And also, you know, children who are in foster care that are being adopted. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single people losing their jobs, which is something that's big. So these are things that we take a look at. But I think that basically weddings, funerals, baby and family, you know, and all different kinds of end of life, or sometimes even like divorce is considered in some ways a funeral ceremony in a way, because you're ending something, but you're beginning something new. So, you know, that's really important. So it's really all of these things. And there's one little piece that I thought I would bring to your attention that you would kind of like. When someone was leaving home, there was a gentleman who had been married for many years. His wife died, and he had to leave his house. And he's leaving his big old house, and they had to move him into a, you know, senior housing. And he was up for it. He wanted to. That's where he wanted to go. Just, I had to move him. It sounds terrible. So, anyhow, he had a really hard time because he and his wife had this beautiful bed, this king-size bed, okay? Mm-hmm. And his son said, listen, we can't move the bed, Dad, but we have a good idea. So what they did was, because it was a smaller room he'd be going into, and there'd be room for, you know, a full-size bed, but not a king-size bed. So what they did was, as part of the ceremony, was they surprised him with that. They cut a piece of the mattress and they framed it.
Oh,
and isn't that warms your heart? And he brought it with him. They had a little inscription there, and they had both, you know, their names on there, mom and dad, and it was really beautiful. And because you know what, sometimes we don't realize how traumatizing it is to leave one's home, even with kids. When you're leaving, let's say they're 8 years old and this was their family home, and now they're moving across the country, or they're moving even down the block to a new school. Sometimes taking a little time and doing something sweet and nice and juicy works, you know, just miracles. I mean, even for a young child, when his goldfish dies or if his cat dies, do something special. You don't need a celebrant for all these things. You can do them yourself, and that's, you know, how the book is kind of interesting. But be mindful, because the first experiences that we have with this, these children will be able to grow up and think that way. You know, it turned out that these sons with their dad, the reason they were so connected was they were part of a community that honored ritual and ceremony. So they were tuned in already.
That's beautiful.
And, you know, and so it made dad's transition a whole lot easier, and also probably a lot, you know, easier than getting a king-size bed into a bathroom.
I think that's you make a great point.
Practical.
You make a wonderful point about setting an example of ritual and ceremony and honoring things that way. Because what I'm hearing also, what you're saying, is that life cycle celebrant isn't just there to create ceremony and to celebrate, but really for support and for comfort and to help ease into the next phase and to be there. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. Now I want to know how the two of you, why you love doing this, how you got into this world and what you love about the process of meeting with clients. This is fascinating to me. I want to hear this. Sasha, what's your story here?
Well, it's funny, Charlotte, you just talked about goldfish, because I think it just made me realize that my very first celebrant ceremony was when my goldfish died, my goldfish Fred. And I had this incredible ceremony, and I hadn't really remembered it until just now. But it was...
When was this?
It was in the 70s. It was a long time ago. But I've always been very drawn to it, and... much like I discussed about primary food, going to the Institute for Integrative Nutrition helped me put language around something I was already doing. Same with the Celebrant Foundation and Institute. That really just helped me find language around what I loved. But my very first experience with this was my sister and her then boyfriend, now husband, coming to New York to elope. And we just didn't really know what to do. Like, we thought, City Hall just seemed a little boring, and we actually found a friend who was friends with a judge, so we did the legal ceremony there. But
okay.
I fashioned a ceremony, and I didn't yet know about the celebrant school, so I just did it. And wow. It was beautiful and organic and fun, and it was just a few months after 9/11, so there was a real sense of the city needed some healing and a lot of love, and so that's... We did a big parade. We invited. So this elopement became actually a big party with all of my friends. But it was great.
That's a great reason to do these things.
Yeah, exactly. And then when I got married, I still hadn't yet gone to this school. But Mike and I kind of created our own celebrant style wedding without even really yet knowing what that was. So we were doing this very organically. And then when I stumbled upon this beautiful school and had a conversation with Charlotte, it just really felt like, it sounds cliche almost, but it felt like coming home, because this is such a family. And as Charlotte described, like, she can just tell you what is going on with the celebrants and what we're doing, because we're all very connected. And the day that I graduated, and I had studied weddings, the day that I graduated, a dear friend of mine died. And Charlotte was right there holding my hand and helped me to do a memorial service for her, which hadn't yet been my training. But she lit a candle in the school. She did the same thing when I lost a friend, and then my dad, and then another friend. And because of the support of the school and the intense training, which is so valuable, the training of that school is so valuable, it helped me to stand there at my dad's funeral, at my grandmother's funeral, and a dear friend's funeral, and be brave and find courage and just honor these lives. And now it's funny to think that about 11 or 12 years ago, I was at my sister's wedding, nervous as anything, shaking, like reading for her, and my hands were shaking. And that seems strange now, because it just is such a comfort zone for me now.
Interesting. I love that.
Stand and hold the place. And
so when did it shift for you, feeling like afraid and nervous being the center of attention, and then realizing you're not the center of attention at these ceremonies anymore?
I don't know. I think it must have been in the very first time I did it.
Amazing.
To officially do it. And the first wedding I ever did was on the Brooklyn Bridge.
It was a
very last minute wedding that, you know, which happens sometimes. People are like, I want to get married this week.
Yeah, I got one of those two weeks ago. Yeah, I just got one of those.
And, you know, just because of the training that I had, I was able to just jump into creating this ceremony and looking up the history of the Brooklyn Bridge. And as Charlotte mentioned earlier, how we make up ritual, but we do so with all this information that we gather from our clients. So it's asking the right questions and really connecting and really understanding and having lots of conversations with them and really reading the questionnaires that we've given to them and just...
So you get to know them. So
you really get to know
this.
Them. And yeah.
What made you nervous about that first one, even if it was your sister?
I should say that wedding that I was nervous at, I wasn't the celebrant. I was just reading. I really wanted to say something because she's so dear to me. And I just wanted to say something at her wedding and hadn't even yet considered that I would ever hold a microphone.
That's so interesting.
And so it was then another sister's wedding that gave me, you know, that I did. I said, I'm going to be the celebrant of this, or I didn't call it that yet because I didn't know that word. But
oh, that's so wonderful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You love doing it.
I love doing it so, so much. And, you know, I'm a shy person and tend to not be somebody who want, like, if you point a camera at me, I'll make all the squirmiest faces in the world. But it's been really good for me in that way as well. It's finding my own voice. I love to write, and I find it very easy to express myself through the written word. And so much of what we do as celebrants is write, and so it's beautiful for that as well.
I'm so glad you shared that, because I'm sure there's got to be people listening thinking I'm too shy to ever be something like this, but I have it in my heart. So what would you say to someone who has that in their heart, want to share, but feels like, I'm shy?
I would tell them to call Charlotte.
And Charlotte, what do you say about that?
Let me explain something to you. I'm going to go back into the Wayback Machine for 15 years ago and how we brought it from Australia here.
Oh, nice.
Now, in the country of Australia, 85% of the funerals, 75% of the weddings, and about 90% of the baby naming ceremonies, because they're more secular than us, you know, are part of the culture. And it just kind of blew us away, and we decided, my friend and partner, Gail Sarma, to bring it back to the United States and see how we would start here. And, you know, it was the internet, so it just started, all these things collided. It was like, for some reason, everything was lined up, all the stars were lined up for this to take off in a different way. So we created a 6-month Jungian-based program that people can come on board, you know, once a week for an hour and 15 minutes with the teacher in a classroom, and also have a wonderful interactive class with just videos and everything you'll see, and also cooperation. You'll be going, let's say, you know, where Sasha's in New York. If a student comes on board with us, they can easily go observe one of Sasha's ceremonies or one of our other celebrant ceremonies. So they get kind of like used to it. You know, we give them the confidence too, and also we let them know, and I'm going to talk about this, that when 9/11 happened here in the East Coast, and we're right here, right in the backyard of 9/11, a lot of people in our town were missing. We didn't know whether they died that day or whether they were lost walking the streets. It was chaotic. I think that people from the East Coast know exactly what I'm talking about. So we started doing ceremonies. I had one. It was a wedding ceremony I was supposed to do for Diana and Glenn, and Diana and Glenn were together for 10 years. She had children with her previous relationship, and Glenn, for all intents and purposes, was dad to her 4 children. And so he was an electrician in the World Trade Center, and he decided to go in that day to help his friend out because his friend wanted to go to the dentist. He wasn't even supposed to work, and instead of them getting married the following week, he perished in 9/11 in Building 1. And I was there with Diana when she was at her house, calling to cancel the wedding plans with her wedding dress in a bag next to us. And instead of us doing, we didn't know he had died yet, we didn't know he went missing, that we would basically be doing an honoring ceremony, a hope ceremony, that he would walk through the door, because chaos ensued, and family were all flying in from all over the world for the wedding ceremony. So we had, instead of a wedding, we had a beginning of a funeral ceremony. And I had gone to other funerals as well, and I was deeply touched by how the community, people in general, you know, come together, and they know what to do. We instinctively know what to do. So we were doing in our own hometown here at the Celebrant Foundation in Montclair, New Jersey, we were doing memorial ceremonies and remembrance ceremonies and healing ceremonies, and, for our community. We're big community ceremonial. We do all different things also in the community for any devastations, whether like in California when there was a fire and the houses burned down. One of our celebrants, Venus Kitagawa Stojic, set a ceremony there because one man had died, and she actually, through the TV coverage, raised money to give this man a proper funeral and help the community build. So, you know, that was very interesting. And we're also, like, we're very much professional storytellers. But in the beginning, I was very, very green at this, you guys. And I got on stage here in Montclair, New Jersey, because I was part of a committee that also said, hey, we're not going to just have the rabbis and the priests be part of this. We're going to get everybody. We're going to get the imam. We're going to be getting people who are not religious. It's not just for specific people that they should grieve. You know, let's include the children of these people who have family members who are missing them, because it's too early to say that they died. And let's have a, like, you know, Sasha had said, a parade. Let's have a gathering and be able to express ourselves with poets and artists and family members, and give hope and strength to our community like we used to do years ago, but for some reason modern society has, you know, made that more difficult. So in that, I remember getting up there and my hand was all clammy and I was all freaked out. I was like, I can't do this. I said, I can't do this because, you guys, I can talk to you on a one-to-one basis, but getting in front of a lot of people, I would lose it, all right? And so I just couldn't do it in front of a big crowd. But then I spoke to a celebrant in Australia, and her name was Kathy. And she said, Charlotte, I'm going to do her Australian accent, Charlotte, you have to do it, darling. You have to do it, because if you don't do it, who's going to? Somebody needs to be the celebrant. So you should feel honored. You should be honored to be up there, and it's not about you at all. You're a vessel. So I'm like, okay, cool, I'm a vessel. And so I went up there, and I did this piece that I did, and I had gathered about 35 people in the community with some other folks to put together a really wonderful presentation that was full of hope during the worst time on the planet in our area here. And it made a world of difference. Now, I want to tell you something and why I'm sitting in this chair today. I went back to tell Kathy what was going on, that it went beautifully in Australia, and she had happened to have died from an aneurysm exactly at the time that I was there doing this. And I really felt like she passed the torch because she was ill for some time. And I feel that all that we were doing, what you're doing, Reverend Cynthia, I tip my hat to you, is making sure that everybody knows that all lives matter, our stories matter. Well, you know, and we're not defined by the bad things that happen in our life. As a matter of fact, they help us become better human beings and feel connected. So I feel that, you know, that's something that we all yearn for and need. And Sasha and I just are as happy as clams. I hope clams are happy. No one really asked them to have this opportunity to be on your show.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to ask some clams if they're happy, but I'm thinking they are. I'm so moved. I mean, I really appreciate you saying that. And I had been gifted this airspace, and I knew I wanted to share it with all of the myriad of richness of people around me, men and women. It's just incredible. And I appreciate everything that you've done and your history with Celebrant Foundation and everything Sasha does. Sasha has definitely played huge roles in my embetterments in life. I've made no mistakes in life. I've just learned a lot. That's just what I like to say. But I am really, more than ever, especially after today's show, really feel like ritual and ceremony and a lot more celebration. I have a lot to celebrate, especially after this past year. I have a lot to hold ritual over and a lot to share. And I wanted people listening to understand that this is available to them too. You know, there was a time that I think that I was pretty grim when I didn't think joy was for me. If that sounds logical, it actually sounded logical to me like 10 years ago or something. That happiness, laughter stuff, no, I can't. Music, no, I can't do that right now. That's not for me. I'm going through too much stuff. So that's not me now. And all of this, everything that you and Sasha spoke about is so attractive to me because this is just where I'm at, and I enjoy and I appreciate new relationships, new things happening, regrowth. And again, you know, I really don't think our previous relationship experiences or mistakes, I see them as just, you know, previous relationships. I mean, I think we don't need to beat ourselves up over things like that. So I love the idea of making good good, happy ceremonies with the new ones. So as much as, I mean, I want to talk about this for hours and hours and hours, any closing ideas or comments, Sasha or Charlotte?
I would like to say that really don't think that you have to wait for these big life milestone events. I think that I really do think we should be honoring all of those. I'm a big, big fan of ceremony and celebrating. But try every day, just really every day, find something. And it doesn't matter what it is, really. It's personalize it, but just find something and call it your ritual, whether it's writing or making tea or flossing your teeth or rolling your socks or whatever, really. But just make it your special ritual.
And they can be private rituals,
and they
too.
Can be they mostly are. They mostly are private. And then, for me anyway, the ones I'm talking about right now, they are private. And it could be going for a just-because walk. Mm-hmm. But do so with intention and mindfulness, and then it becomes ritual, not chore. And so you're with it. You are really in the moment. You're like, I am brushing my skin. I am flossing my teeth. I am, you know. So just do it with intention. And the more you do that and tune out from all the busyness of the crazy world that we live in, the more you're kind of tuning into yourself. Mm-hmm. And that is a really self-loving act. And when we spend time to take care of ourselves and love ourselves, then we can be more loving and more kind to those around us. So a mini ritual a day is in fact a very loving act towards the world at large.
I agree. Closing ideas, Charlotte?
Yeah, I'm going to pick up from what Sasha said. It is very important to unplug. We're in the beginning of the year right now. There's a lot going on in our world. And I think that if you sometimes, this is something that we do in a lot of ceremonies. I'll give you a little ritual, and everybody can do it their way. Let's all pretend we have three candles in front of us. They're invisible candles, or they're we can make them look any way we want, all right? They're our candles. So we're imagining three different candles. So I'm going to ask one of the listeners, whoever it might be, to come on up and light the first candle. So the first listener will come in and light the candle. That's nice. So I'm going to say, this candle is for those people who came before us, because without them, we wouldn't be here. So we're just going to be mindful about that, about the past. Now what we're going to do is we're going to light another candle. We're going to ask another one of our listeners from far away, this over the pond, to light the middle candle. And this middle candle is for all the people in our lives now. They don't even have to be people. Maybe they're beings. And how they support us and nurture us. And maybe some of those who don't, but they give us their lesson too, don't they? Folks that maybe you don't get along with your ma. Okay? All right. Now, let's go to the third candle. We're all going to pick somebody from down south. They're going to come up and light the third candle. So now all three candles are lighting, and they're shining bright. And this third candle is for the future, for our generations. Let's say, like the indigenous people say in many parts of the world, seven generations in front of us, ahead of us. We don't know what that's going to be like. But we know right now what we do today, and maybe somebody that we are in touch with today, will reverberate, and you will make an impact on their life. So just being aware of that, you know, don't let it be a guilt trip or anything, but just be aware of really how important the thread of life is, how we're all interconnected and cross-pollinating. It's like little bees. And really, we're all here. And if we think about it in this way, there's like these three things. It doesn't have to be a candle. Maybe you just want to put three rocks out and do this. I think that there is going to be just a way of realizing how important you are in the world and how important everybody else is, and that there are no accidents. We're all in this together. We're a big team. And I think that's what I want to say.
That's so beautiful. To the future, and perhaps Celebrant Institute is in your future. And if it is, go to www.celebrantinstitute.org. And Sasha Jones is here too. Your website for
Sasha Jones Ceremonies, and that's Sasha with a C in the middle. S A C H A Jones Ceremonies.
And now I'm getting requests to officiate weddings. I've got two now, and I have a lifetime mm-hmm. goal of 1,000. So 998 more to go. That's part of my longevity plan. So thank you, both of you, for being here.
Thank you.
And again, you've been listening to Primary Food. This is Cynthia Cherish Mallorin, Reverend DJ Cherish the Love. And before I forget, let me tell you how to reach out to me and get our attention on social media, Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, at DJ Cherish the Love. That's spelled L-U-V, hashtag using Primary Food, Heritage underscore Radio, and hashtag Rev Love. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.